Hey everybody, welcome to the 39th episode of the JDO Show. I am your host, J. David Osborne, and today on the show we have Troy James Weaver, which is weird because last week we had Brian Allen Carr. Lots of three-named people. Maybe I'll get Jeremy Robert Johnson or Brian Michael Bendis or Chad Michael Vincent or, I don't know, maybe we'll continue the three-name trend. Troy James Weaver is the author of Wichita Stories, which is one of my very favorite books. He's also the author of Visions, which I put out on Broken River because I liked it so much, and also Marigold, out now from King Shot Press. Those titles are doing really well. He's a fantastic writer. He lives in Kansas. He writes really raw shit, and we have a pretty raw conversation. Enjoy.
Dude.
Hey, what's going on?
Is that better?
Oh, dude, it's so much better. Oh, yeah.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah, this is better for me, too. Those headphones were making me all, I don't know. Funny. They're kind of echoey and weird.
Oh, right on, right on. Yeah, oh, this is so good. Yeah, I can hear you crystal clear. This is great.
Sweet.
Because before it was like,
so, right.
yeah. So basically, I guess we'll kind of start from here. So,
okay.
Before the bad connection, we were talking about how you contacted one of the last surviving members of the Heaven's Gate cult because a buddy of yours had said that the same person had basically been running their website since 1997. And did you get right. anything out of it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, I've just obviously been fascinated with cults, you know, pretty much my whole life. It's kind of
right.
just one of those weird things, seeing the shit on the news and just being interested in it. So I guess by going through their website, you know, I was just curious about what they really thought of suicide and you know, those hard topics like that, for obvious reasons, you know. Yeah, I think that it was pretty interesting. They gave me some clues into what they believe.
Didn't they say that suicide is like for the specific people, it wasn't suicide. Like suicide is always wrong, but for those particular
right.
people, they were chosen to. Were these the Hale-Bopp people who were trying to get on that
yeah.
comet? Okay, cool.
Yes.
Yeah. So
yes.
they were like chosen people by whoever
right.
to get on that comet.
Yeah. By this Doe, with Marshall Applewhite. And T, who was Bonnie Nettles, she died in like 85. And she founded the group with Marshall White. And yeah, just very fascinating. They were kind of like Doe was like supposedly kind of like Jesus or whatever.
Okay.
And like believed that 2,000 years ago. Was the last time somebody from the level above human had been to Earth, which I think he was obviously talking about Jesus, because that would be about the right, you know, timeline.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very weird because they don't believe in spiritual existence. They believe these people actually left Earth and entered into physical bodies.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's real weird. When I brought up the word spiritual, when I talked to him, they said it's not spiritual at all. It's actual physical, you know, life.
Oh, wait, that's it. I wonder if there's any cults out there who take like Judas and say like he was the actual divine. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like they're all so based on that story. It would just be interesting if there were a few that took, like, you know, like this, like, minor character or, like, the traitor character and was like, no, that
right.
was it. Because he actually brought, you know, he actually caused, you know, Jesus to die. So he was, in a sense, the
right.
special one, right?
Right. It's like the, have you read that Borges story, The Three Versions of Judas?
Oh, gosh.
It's,
yeah, I'm sure I did.
He taps into that whole thing and like how this like I can't remember really, but like a German, you know how he writes the stories, you know, a German like intellectual dude like wrote like these papers on how Judas was the savior and all this stuff. It's really good.
It's quite possible I'm just ripping that off and I totally forgot what I was doing. I do that all the time.
No, yeah, it's. I think that I've heard that idea from other people, and we've talked about it, and they don't know who Borges is, and so I'm sure it's like something other folks have maybe thought about if they've, delved into the Bible whatsoever.
Right.
Because honestly, there's like this sense of it that it totally makes sense. Everything that he did had to happen for the crucifixion to fall into place, So
Did you hear that
pretty weird stuff.
Charles Manson is like bleeding out of his ass to death?
Holy shit. No, I knew he was in the hospital, but I didn't know he was bleeding out of his ass.
I think that's what it like. He can't stop bleeding out of his ass, basically.
Holy shit.
It seems like a
That's
fucking.
nuts.
That's a bad way to go, dude.
Yeah, that's terrible. I
Well, and
mean,
it's a bad way to live, too. I mean, he definitely. Well, I mean,
yeah.
you see on Facebook, everybody's like, ha, the first, cocksucker of 2017, because people really like to make up these stories about, because I think that they've watched too much Game of Thrones, where they're like, last year was Game of Thrones season 5, but this year is Game of Thrones season 6. And so it's like now the bad guys are dying. But Manson's always been a little bit, it's always been a little bit more complicated, I think, mostly because, I mean, he's clearly a psychopath and he's, a racist, and
For sure.
he or totally orchestrated those murders.
Right.
But since I was like a little punk kid, and I used to listen to System of a Down, and Darren Malakian would always wear an ATWA shirt,
Right.
air trees, water, animals, and stuff. And so that always kind of colored my view of Manson as like this dude who had like some okay ideas, but was just also a racist and a murderer.
Oh yeah, I think that people tend to get lost in these. Like for instance, me, end up a death cult because I'm interested. It's like there's a fascination there because not everything anyone's gonna say is like total batshit. But sometimes you're like, oh, that makes sense, but. Yeah, when you put the big picture into place with most of that shit, it's just yeah, they're pretty bad people and probably deserve whatever ass bleeding's coming to them or whatever, so
I mean, do you think
but
that though? Like, do you think that like an entire life in prison and then dying by bleeding out of your ass is an adequate punishment for what happened?
well honestly, I think the easy way out is the death penalty. I think that people wasting away in a jail cell is far more punishment. But I don't know. I've never been in a jail cell, so I guess you could probably get used to it. It wouldn't be so bad after a while, but that's kind of what I've always thought. But
It's just like a nice little home away from home where your toilet is where you poop and it's also where you make your drinks.
Right. Yeah. And if you get lucky, you might get some drugs in there. So
Yeah,
it's
it's like a
probably not too terrible.
combination toilet and blender. Like, it's like it's
Right.
cool. I can make a fucking smoothie in this bitch. And then it's like, oh, dude, who crapped in my blender? God damn
They
it.
do the they do the weirdest shit, yeah. They're like making moonshine in there and stuff.
Oh yeah. They found out how to do all kinds of crazy shit in prison that doesn't even, like, well, I mean, a lot of it is, guards just letting people get away with stuff, right? But,
Oh yeah, for sure.
yes. Oh, go ahead.
You know that like one of the biggest contraband things in prison is like cigarettes? And that we well, it
Are
depends
they?
on the prison. Some prisons let you smoke, but I think most of them now you can't smoke.
God, that would suck balls, dude.
And so like when you see this is coming from my brother's mouth, it's like, yeah, so if you get caught with like tobacco or something, you get in some trouble. You get
What?
written up and disciplinary action, and but he said that's like the biggest thing because everybody's addicted to cigarettes,
Especially in prison, yeah.
yeah. So I just thought that was weird, but
Yeah, I always figured you could probably smoke in your jail cells or, whatever. I mean, who cares? You're there
right,
forever. Well, not everybody,
yeah.
but I mean, you gotta have something. Like that, oh man, to me, like that makes me feel a little bit weird and panicky because I don't know. I do want to quit, but I wouldn't want to just be thrown into a cell and
Yeah.
have to do it that way.
not have that option. Yeah, that would fucking blow.
I feel like people on the West Coast and a lot of people on the East Coast, and also people in like major, like metropolitan areas, don't tend to smoke, but everybody that, like so many people from Oklahoma do, it's really kind of bizarre to go home. And, you know, I'm used to going outside and like looking around and making sure that nobody's around to see me. Like I have to be clandestine about it. But then I go back to Oklahoma and it's like I go out with the same mentality and like five people join me and they're like, "Hey man, are you smoking? Like, why are you being a stranger?"
I mean, yeah, you have the problem, in Kansas. Like, I'll go to a show and see a band play, even if, like, I don't know, just a small show, like at a bar or something or wherever. And if you go outside to smoke, there's going to be at least 15 to 20 people out there, and half the time they're going to bum off you. So it's
God,
just
I
kind of
fucking
like,
hate. How do you feel about bumming? Because I hate it.
oh, I hate it too. I always have my own smokes. It just, I used to do that when I was younger, because you couldn't buy them or whatever. But I don't know. I'm just always, I look at these dudes, I'm like, you're like 35. Why don't you have your own cigarettes? You knew you're going to a show, you know?
No, and it's like
It's,
and they do know. I mean, there's such a culture of that in downtown Portland, especially among like the homeless people. It almost seems like maybe it's on principle rather than anything else that they're like, I'm not going to pay for my own cigarettes. Like this fool's going to give me one. And it's like I remember once I did my thing. I went and I found a place to hid or to hide, sorry.
No, you're
And I was in front of a bush and all of a sudden, I literally like I touched the flame to the tip, and a face popped out of the bush. It was like, "Hey man, can I get one of those?" I was like, "You gotta be fucking kidding me, man!" Like it's without fail when you're downtown, people are gonna ask you. So I just don't smoke when I'm downtown, which kind of sucks. But I have to abstain because I don't know. It's like I paid for these, dude. Like I'm not made of money. Like these cost money. And even when people ask you if like, "Can I buy one from you?" It's awkward. It's like, dude. Don't,
No.
yeah, no, yeah.
No, you can have one, make them feel like an asshole about it,
Right.
which they usually feel awkward about it.
Yeah,
I don't
the
know.
worst kind of people are the ones who are ex-smokers who literally just smoke every time that you hang out. And they bum like every time you go out to smoke, they're there. They're like, "Hey, can I get one? Hey, can I get
Yeah,
one?"
I worked with a guy like that. He was he claimed he didn't smoke, yet he smoked every day.
Right.
Just my cigarettes. And I was like, nah, dude, I just started saying no.
Yeah.
You know? And
How long did it take you to get there?
Oh man, I was pretty nice to him for probably about a month. And then I was like, nah,
Right.
buy your own.
Yeah.
Buy me a pack while you're at it. I think I said something like that, but I
Yeah.
don't know. He occasionally after that would come with a pack, and he would try to stretch it out throughout the week, and then he would start bumming at the end of the week. And I was like, well, you're making an effort, but still not good enough.
Right. Yeah, it's like the people who, you know, they're not addicted to drugs. They just do coke on the weekend, you know. It's like I don't need it. It's just it's Saturday. Saturday is snow day. So
No, there's no issues there,
No. Yeah, I mean it's as long as it's only on Saturdays. And then it's
right?
like and then it's like, well, Wednesday is kind of like the Saturday of the middle of the week. So,
Right.
yeah. But so
And just
you're
intermittently, if friends have stuff throughout the week, and that they're willing to hook you up with, or yeah, I've been around folks like that too.
I just don't know. I just don't understand the impulse of like, asking people for something that is clearly theirs. Like, there was this one time I was at a bus stop and this dude who was younger than me, but like healthy white male, he didn't have any shoes on, but otherwise he was healthy. He steps off the bus and he walks up to the person standing next to me and he attempts to sell the guy his food stamps, for cash. And the guy says, no, thanks. And I'm standing there waiting to get on the bus and I have a bag with, like a Red Bull and some macaroni and cheese in it. He literally points at my bag and says, "Hey man, can I have your food?" And
What the?
I'm like, dude, no. It's like,
That's
I
crazy.
just saw you try to sell your food stamps, dude.
Right. That's
But
bizarre, man.
it is bizarre. So you're doing music now?
Yeah, a little bit. I always kind of have like messed around with it, but I got a guitar finally. I've had an acoustic for like years, but I haven't had an electric guitar since I was like probably 20. And I'm 30, so it's been a while, but yeah, so I got this guitar and I've started playing around with my friend and hopefully get some cool jams going. But
That's tight. I want to be in a
yeah.
band again. I want to start a band. I just don't have any
Hell
musical
yeah.
talent.
Yeah, I can't, I feel like that all the time, but I don't think you have to have talent to play in a band. I think
Right.
it's just you go do your shit and it's kind of like the way I feel about like Daniel Johnson. It's like that dude has like no playing ability, really. He writes some cool songs. They're
Yeah.
sweet, and I like that stuff. But where there's no fucking talent involved. It's
Right.
just him doing his weird shit.
Yeah.
And so I don't even think that matters, and or maybe that becomes its own weird thing. Like you don't know what the hell you're doing, so it's like totally original and cool. But who knows? I don't know.
Sometimes that happens with writing, I guess. Sometimes, sort of. In fact, yeah, I was talking about that yesterday on the Facebook. We kind of talked on the Facebook about this, but
Right.
I guess I put this post up, man, and like it basically said that like here's a thought, like maybe being good is less important than being interesting. And then it was about like what's better, a photorealistic portrait of a roll of toilet paper or a, I think I said like a pencil drawing of a demon riding a hell dolphin. And
Hell yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
some people were into it, some people weren't, but I think
Right.
the only thing that annoyed me about it were people who were, intentionally obtuse about what I meant by good, where they were like,
Right.
good is interesting is good, and good is interesting. And I was like, thanks, fucking Yoda.
Right.
I appreciate that. Like,
Well, I'm sorry if I was one of them. I get what you're saying totally. I just kind of, I don't know. I have this sense of like it's not up to, I don't know. Or if you're like creating, it's not up to you whether it's perceived as this or that. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I mean, you can try to make it so that you can make people perceive it as this or that, but at the end of the day, they're probably not gonna perceive it in any way you intended it. Maybe bits and pieces, but I don't know. I've always thought that was pretty weird. It's kind of like a lot of people dig modern art, right? A lot of people just think it's like shit. It's dude splattering paint on a canvas, so the value comes about through the observer or the person that put they the person that actually puts value on it is the person who like the critic or the person buying it, right? So 50 Shades of Grey is fucking awesome, right? Because and it's good, it's good because millions of people say it is, that's not my interpretation of good, but everybody imports their own meaning of what that is or something. I don't know. I don't know if that's really what you're talking about, but that's just how I felt. So it's
Well,
always hard for me to gauge.
no,
'Cause
no,
I think a photorealistic portrait of a roll of toilet paper is badass. And I think hell dolphins are badass too.
right.
So I put the same amount of goodness into both.
Right,
It's like,
for sure. Yeah, no, and I think I told you in like the instant mess, or maybe it was on the thread or whatever, but like the mistake was that I was talking about like good. And I think
right.
what I meant by good was I guess stylistically proficient is basically what I meant. You know what I mean? And by
Okay.
stylistically proficient, I can break that down even further by saying like if you were to pick up any kind of professionally published literary type novel, right?
Right.
So I was basically talking about, those kind of long meandering sentences, which again, man, I mean, no, I'm with you. Like sometimes I really dig those things, but I was saying
Sometimes
that,
it's fucking dull and boring for sure.
right? No, and you said it exactly, man. It's like sometimes they're dull and boring. So I was basically
Yeah.
saying like just being interesting is better, but
Yeah.
so once you're interesting, then you can get that style down. But I think sometimes like if you're interesting, unless you're a really bad writer, I think you can just be like kind of an okay writer, but if you have really interesting things to say, that'll do a lot of the heavy lifting. And sometimes vice versa. Sometimes you can write your way out of some dull shit. Sometimes.
I agree with that. So I think I totally am on the same page you're on with that, because I was thinking about it a little further today. And I'm like a huge Dostoevsky fan. And, you know, I know part of it's the translation, but that shit is clunky as fuck. You know, it's it's not good writing. But they're filled with these ideas, and the ideas are really interesting. And so I totally understand that, you know. And I was thinking about him because, you know, it's like, yeah, he's like this giant in world literature or whatever, but I mean, the dude was writing by he was getting paid by the page or whatever. So if he made these huge fucking books, he got paid a lot more money, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that, part of what he did to keep it interesting was just filled it with whatever came into his fucking head, like philosophically or like just all these ideas, you know? And I think that's kind of what's great about it, but it kind of like, what is shitty about it is you know, the writing quality or whatever, which again could just be bad translations. But even with the bad translations, you kind of get a sense of, you know, how things get, you know, mucked up. Or if like one section is like 200 pages and then a really important section is like 15 pages. Right. I don't know. You know what I mean?
No, totally. And I think like that what's so interesting about that too, though, is that I guess I've been trying to, like, in my own stuff, I've been like a little bit dissatisfied with my books up to this point. And the reason, like, this is coming from like things that I've thought about with my own self, basically, where I feel like my first few books, like, I like them, I think they're pretty good, but
yeah,
I also feel like they're really kind of, I don't know, I feel like they're a little stuffy in how they're constructed because I was so meticulous about style, basically.
Right.
So I guess what I'm talking about, like, with me personally is I wanted to get to a point where I could have, you know, like, it's like music, and if every single note is, like, this perfect, like, crescendo, you know, type, you know, orgasmic note, like, if you try to make every note that, then none of them will be that way because it's all that way. You know what I mean? So I was just thinking about, you know, like, how maybe I, like with my own stuff, I would try instead to like get a little bit simpler with it. Well, not more minimalist, right? Because it's already pretty pared down, but actually maybe expanding it just a little bit, just so that, you know, like just not focusing on every single line the way that I normally do, because it's such a tedious process too, you know?
Right, yeah, and I don't know.
I just think maybe the book would be a little better if I like kind of loosened up a little bit and just stopped focusing on style so much, but I don't know.
Oh, I see that, man. I had horrible failures. I tried to write the most, you know, pretentious, flowery bullshit for years and years. And, like, you know, my favorite writer in the world was, and partially, I mean, he still is, Barry Hanna. But he's kind of in that really stylistic category still. I think he makes it work, though. He makes it a little more human, and the stories are hilarious and wonderful. But when I started writing Wichita Stories, everything switched for me. It was like, holy shit, this is how I need to write, you know, like just pare shit down and kind of tell it and a flat way. And I thought that the flatness kind of adds something. It's not like a Tao Lin flatness, like that shit bores me, but
No, that shit is fucking terrible.
Yeah, it's like it feels soulless or something. I don't know, but you know, just kind of flatten it out, make it a little more neutral, and then therefore if there's like, when there's like emotional parts, there's a little more impact there, because there's this kind of ambiguous sense of like, you know, is this sentimental or is it just thoughtful, you know? I don't think they're mutually the same thing, so I don't know.
Well, what I like so much about Wichita Stories in general too is the really is like the ambiguity, which probably I'm guessing that it kind of came easy to you because Wichita Stories deals primarily with your brother, and so that's right. already going to create ambiguous feelings in you, right? Love and hate right. and, you know, mm-hmm. disappointment and pride and all these different kind of things. So a lot of the lines come through. There's a lot of that kind of stuff in there, you know, like that kind of ambiguity that's like that might, you know, that might actually more than anything else be like one of the most compelling things to me is like just ambiguity, how like two things can coexist at the same time. Maybe that's why I like Welbeck yeah. so much, because he's like racist and misogynistic too, but there uh-huh. are also like lines that are very like sort of life affirming, and then there are other lines that are very like existentialist, and you know what I mean? I dig that kind of like the ambiguity is what compels me, I guess.
I agree 100%. Like that's like, I'm glad you brought up Welbeck, because a lot of people don't talk enough about that shit. I have not read his new book yet, but I read what is that one?
The Map in the Territory.
Map in the Territory, and then I read the Elementary Particles. Is that what it's called?
Uh huh. Yeah.
Okay, and then a couple of others. I read a novella that he wrote called. I'm gonna pronounce it wrong. It's like Lanza wrote or something. I don't know.
I haven't read that one.
And then I read a few. I think Possibility of an Island.
That was the toughest one, I think. Like that was that was brutal, because that character is such a fucking shithead.
Yeah, I honestly don't even think I ever finished that. I finished all the other ones. I have that one on my shelf still, and I don't think I got through it. Because it was probably, to me, it was like the most unlikable thing mm-hmm. ever. But I'm gonna try to get through it, because I think what he does is pretty valuable shit. And he's another one of those people, like some of the writing's clunky, you know, a lot of it is.
Yeah.
But he's one of those ideas people. And like you said, he has some shit ideas in there. He is a racist and a misogynist, and
yeah.
But that's very clear, I think. But the other things that he does are very compelling. I like that shit.
Well, and it's also, I mean, like, he also has ideas that are so fucking pretentious that I don't think you or I would ever even attempt them. Like in The Map in the Territory, where he has himself as a character, and then he's the murder right. victim at the end,
right?
And, like a serial yeah. killer, like cuts him up into pieces and shit, and. And then, uh-huh. you know, there's this investigation into it. And it seems like such a preposterous idea, but it's really well yeah. executed, I thought. Like, that was my favorite part of the book, dude. Like, I love that part.
I thought so, too. I definitely thought that was his best book that I had read by a large margin. And it was because he was really attempting to do something so crazy, you know, with mm-hmm. with a story and kind of go there like without even thinking it's a bad idea. I think that's cool, you know, because it could have failed miserably, obviously, but I thought he did a really, really good job. And then, you know, what he's commenting on with like art and like, you know, it's just such a weird little book.
Yeah. yeah. And also thinking about like the racism kind of stuff. I mean, on the surface, yeah, but I mean, I don't know if, man, I don't honestly know if I feel comfortable like commenting on France's relationship with their Muslim population in the same way right. that I would in America, cuz it's such a different case, dude. And I mean,
oh yeah.
I mean, on the one hand, you want to be like, you know, you can't blanket term one group of people, but I mean, France is so small, and the amount of attacks right. that they've suffered in such a small area, like it would be like if, you know, that many attacks were happening in fucking, you know, New York State or something, you know?
Right.
And it would be a little bit of a different story, but America's so big, it's a little bit tougher to like, I think, kind of grasp that maybe.
Right. Yeah, totally. And I think he's doing kind of, obviously it's different, but, you know, like you said, the Muslim population over there is more condensed, mm-hmm. into in these cities, and but like there's, you know, a lot more people. I don't know. It's kind of like how I feel about him commenting on those things. It's like maybe like the same way here in America we comment on Christianity, you know.
Interesting.
No, people have no problem talking shit on the Catholic neighbor they have. Mm-hmm. You know, it becomes a problem when it's foreign to them, right?
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So like,
I get it. Yeah,
and then that's when the whole thing, the context changes here is, oh, you can't do that, you know, you can't say that. Like, you know, and I'm not defending like bullshit people at all. But I do think it's different. I think for him, it might be like talking shit on a Catholic is here, you know.
That's
or
a really
whatever.
Good point, man, because we totally can do that. We do that with Baptists, too, you know. And
yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
It's like, oh, crazy snake churches, mm-hmm. you know, shit like that. And
right.
it's kind of like, but then as soon as you're like, hey, the Muslim religion is maybe a little strange, you know, it's like, don't you fucking dare. Don't you
right.
dare. It's like you racist, like Islamophobic. Right. And it's like, well, I mean, I think that Baptists are kind of goofy. I guess Sam Harris gets that complaint a lot, that he's Islamophobic, which he is, though.
Like, he definitely is. I mean, there's a difference between being critical and totally just saying bullshit.
Right.
Sam Harris definitely says bullshit.
Yeah.
Just things that are not fucking true, you know?
Yeah.
And or like he'll use these like statistics that just have no fucking bearing in reality. I don't know. It's that post news shit. Really, is mm-hmm. what it is. It's people are importing importance and just false shit. I mean, it's even when they're told that it's not real, you know, it's like, oh, I don't care. You have your opinion, I have mine. Well, you know, you're a fucking idiot.
Right.
Because facts and opinions are different, dude. You know,
right.
So.
And it's one of those things, too, that's so funny where back when I was a kid, I was like, man, religion is the biggest problem, turns people into assholes. And a lot of people clearly thought the same way as me because now there's a big atheist community. And then it turns out, no, people are just fucking assholes. And now atheists are like the biggest group of fucking assholes on the internet. They're all the fucking GamerGator trolls. That's one of like their things,
dude,
right?
That's been my thing the whole time. They're the new like televangelists, right?
Yeah.
They're the new Billy Grahams of the world. The atheists are. They're the biggest preachers out there. Like, fuck off. You know, like let people do their own shit and like stop worrying so damn. If you believe so wholeheartedly that God doesn't exist or whatever. Like, can't you be good with that? Like,
right.
Just be at peace with it. You have to, anybody who has a dissenting point of view on that, you can't let them be. Mm-hmm. Like, just like how you're saying, oh, well, if a Mormon missionary comes up on my porch, I'm going to blast them just because I can. Well, dude, that's an 18-year-old kid. So mm-hmm. have fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
You know?
And it's also just like I mean, like, it's also a fucking mild annoyance, and it's one of those things where, you know, I opened my door the other day, and I think it was Jehovah's Witnesses. It was two girls. They had to be 17, 18, or but they had the, you know, like the jean, maybe, oh, Pentecostal, I think, maybe was what it was, because
uh-huh.
they had like the jean skirt, you know what I'm talking about? That's that's Pentecostal, right?
I think so.
Anyway, like, they were sweet, and they were just
sure.
like, they were just like, hey, can you, I was wondering if you wanted to talk about the Bible, and I was like, oh, no thanks, but I appreciate it, and I wish you the best of luck, and they're like, oh, thanks, and then they left. It was a great interaction, dude. It was like a really nice, positive interaction, and I don't understand why, like, those poor, like, sweet girls probably go from house to house and have people be like, get the fuck off my porch, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, why? Why?
Exactly. And it's the same, you know, it's like, oh, well, yeah, maybe you don't want to hear it. You already have your opinions or whatever about whatever. That's fine. You can be gracious and be nice, and people are just, I think they go out of their way to be dicks because they want to prove a point. And a lot of times there's no point to prove. There's no point to prove when you're arguing religion or being an atheist. There's no fucking point to prove. because at the end you just end up circling around the same territory infinitely. There's absolutely, I always think of like what Wittgenstein said, and it was like he was talking about, you know, the existence of God or whatever, and he said, you know, there, you have to have like equal amount to disprove something than you do to prove it. Therefore, like the existence of God, I'm paraphrasing horribly, but the existence of God is one of those impossible questions, and no, to where you should almost not even consider it, unless that's why it's called faith, right? Because it's just this blind thing. And I think it goes both ways. Yeah, there's a lot of science out there that says this and this is possible, blah, blah, blah. But science, we also know, is a lot of theory, especially when you're talking about a galaxy or whatever. I just think it's kind of worthless science, shit to argue about.
Science is really not as accurate as most people think it is. I want to make one more quick point about that. I mean, the major problem, obviously, with religion right now is just their particularly their the church's apparent hatred of, you know, Planned Parenthood and abortion. Like, that's probably the biggest problem, where it's like, okay, you guys are assholes for that. You guys are assholes for that, right? But people also contain multitudes, and here's my controversial opinion, is that actually good people can hold those views and still be good people.
I agree.
But science also, dude, I mean, I believe in, obviously, I believe in science, like it's a deity or something, but what a lot of people don't think about when it comes to science is that a lot of studies are almost never replicated. Some of them are, but the thing is, in the scientific community, it's made up of people, obviously, and people want to, you know, have personal fame, money, and glory. So everybody wants to be the first one to do an experiment, but very few people want to be the ones to replicate that experiment, because it gets significantly less attention, and it costs money and time and resources, and they're not going to get any like real glory for it. So, I mean, why bother? So, I mean, some stuff does, and we can be pretty sure about some stuff, but a lot of things are, I mean, there's smart people out there, but I mean, I tend to trust, you know, experts on things. Like if I have a question about like a rock or something, I'd ask a rock scientist and probably believe her, you know, but
yeah,
but you know what I mean? Like no, it's like science says that this is the thing. And I'm like, well, science can suck a dick. Cause I'm,
well, yeah, it's one of those, it's like fallible, right? It's imperfect in a lot of ways. I mean, yeah, like the things that we do know, there's definitely scientific facts and truths. I'm not saying that. I saw this thing, and it was a scientist said that what they know about, like, what there is to know in science is like 0.01%. And that's all they know. You know, like he was like, it's like infinite. So if science is infinite, then, you know, or think about like, well, you know, 50 years ago, the medicine and shit they were giving you, we found out was horrible for you or whatever. Like, and then it changes, you know, over time.
Or like bloodletting, you know? Like, oh, you're sick. Let's cut you open and just let you bleed all the bad out.
Yeah, yeah. And or I was thinking about, I heard a story about, I think it was in India, they're having a epidemic with people are taking God, what are those things called? I'm having a brain fart.
Boner pills?
No, like penicillin and shit. What is that shit called? Antibiotics?
Yeah,
okay. So they're taking antibiotics at such a high rate that because the doctors will just hand it over the counter, basically, over there.
It's going to destroy their gut flora, basically.
That and, like, well, their body, their bodies are, all there's going to be, like, no defense left if they get an infection, right? Because the drugs won't work anymore. And I just find that fascinating, but I think that's how science works, right? So this is what we have now. When everybody gets to the point where infections cannot be cured or helped along with these drugs, something else has to come along. So it's
Hallelujah.
This constant.
We're going to go home to Jesus. We're all going home.
You know,
we're all going home. Once that like the 99 kills 99% of all bacteria, once that 1% of bacteria fucks and makes the super badass Batman bacteria, we're all fucked. Yeah. We're going home to the good Lord.
We're definitely. And that's the way it is. But that's one of those things with science, man. So we found this thing, they go, "Oh man, this works real well." But they didn't look beyond that at, you know, they're like, "Oh, this will work probably infinitely." And then, you know, 20, 25 years later, they're like, holy shit, we have to monitor how much people take of these drugs because they're no longer working.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then so they have to change it up, and then they're scrambling. And this is the evolution of science. It's not a hard, like, I mean, it is factual based, but it's like, it's just as evolving and moving along as anything else, I think. So,
although I do have to say, I do like a man. I'm like a man in a lab coat. Like, they look,
yeah, well, fuck yeah, man.
Dude, they look so good. You know? It's like I just want to snuggle up in there like a cat, have them wrap me in that lab coat.
Now, I always wanted to be a pharmacist just for the coat.
Just dude, the coats are tight.
Yeah, man.
It's kind of like
I would wear that shit everywhere.
It's kind of like a cape, dude. Like you kind of get to wear a cape everywhere, except it's like a jacket.
It's because they're kind of like superheroes, you know.
That is true.
To the sick people, so
until they hand you a fucking fistful of antibiotics and all of your good bacteria dies, and you know you can't, your body can't defend itself.
Exactly.
Then they're more like just, you know, dude, that must be such a fucking tough job though, being a doctor. Could you imagine having to tell people that they're gonna die every single day? You know, especially if you're like an oncologist or something, and you're like, yeah, bad news. Like you're no more. Muerto.
Right. Yeah, man. I don't know though. I think, you know, I think it's really tough. I think if you're a veteran at it, they're probably so, and it's like taking the drugs and you're probably like so immune to it after a while.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm sure you still feel sadness or whatever, but I think that they cope very well, you know, so probably not in their first years or whatever, but as they move along. I know I had a wisdom tooth pulled out like a couple months back.
That can suck, dude. I had all four at once, and I was fucking out for a day or two.
Yeah, I was an idiot, and like I didn't have insurance for a long time, and they all grew in and shit, and like so I had one that had like a cavity in it, and it was on the upper, and people were like, "Oh, you can die, dude, if infection gets in there, because it's like straight up into your sinus cavity and stuff."
That's
and
totally true.
Gets into your brain. And I was like, "Oh shit!" So like a few weeks later, I got it pulled. But I was just thinking about this dude, like, you know, the doctor. I went in there. And they gave me a couple shots. They didn't put me out or anything. And then he came in like 10 minutes later, and just like was on top of me, yanking this fucking tooth out.
That's hot.
And it took like, you know, like 30 seconds or something. But he just like yanked it out, plopped it in this thing, just kind of was like, "All right, we're done. Thanks." And then just walked out. And I'm like, "What the fuck, man? That was like the most unchill, like, not that I need like a hug or anything, but you just ripped a bone out of my body."
Yeah. It'd be funny if he put his like boot on your chest, like for leverage.
he had his elbow in my chest. I mean, he was really getting in there. Yeah.
Nice.
And then I was like, "Holy shit, dude!"
And you're just like,
I felt kind of like attacked, you know. Right? I was like,
"It'd be funny if there was like, if it'd be funny if like that's just how doctors were. Like they just ran into rooms with like syringes and fuck, like held downwards, you know, like a weapon, and just fucking plunged it into people's jugulars, and then ran away. Like, all right, on to the next one." And you're just like, "What the actual fuck?" Or like whenever like you get like a colonoscopy, they come in and just like flip you over, like tear your pants down and just like, you know, shove a camera in there, and you're like, "What the fuck?" They're like, "Oh yeah, looking good, stop squirming." Then they punch you in the back of the head and like shove the thing in deeper.
That's how it felt, man. I was like, "Shit, this guy just fucked me up, man." But no, it's funny. I don't know. I was really stunned by it. Then I'm an idiot. And so I walk out of the place and I had like the gauze in my mouth and like blood everywhere. Mm-hmm. I'm driving home, and I know you're not supposed to smoke.
Right.
And I lit up a cigarette like 5 minutes later.
Oh, dude. So you're, it was you're like me, dude. You're hooked.
Yeah, like... I was like smoking through the gauze and stuff. I'm like, God, I need to quit.
How much do you smoke per day?
Like a pack.
I've got it down to a half a pack, but it's American Spirit. Yeah. So like one of those is like kind of big.
Yeah, they last forever, man. Yeah, my friend smokes some, and every now and again he'll be like, "Hey, you want to trade? I'm gonna have one of those Camels," because he used to smoke Camels. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, "All right, sure." Oils. And he'll be done with his cigarette, and I'm still like puffing away at the American Spirit for like 5 more minutes.
Oh, it's great, but, man! It's great. It's what I. Mm-hmm. It's the one that I smoke, like, because I used to smoke Turkish Royals, and those are just like candy, man. Like, I just go through one of those, like a pack of those, like nothing. And then, so I switched to American Spirits, and that's like, some people who are listening are going to laugh at me, but like when I want to quit, those are the cigarettes I go to. Cause it's just, it's not the same experience, right? It's not entirely,
I get that.
It's not entirely pleasant. Like, it's not bad, but it's not like,
it's not as satisfying, but they also last a bit longer. And I get that. Yeah. Cause I didn't go to American Spirits, but it's kind of stupid, but I used to smoke Camel filters all the time, and now I'm smoking the lights, the blues.
Okay.
Because I thought I would quit because I hate it. No, this isn't doing anything for me. But now I just got used to those, so I've been addicted to those for the last 2 years. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just like,
What if that was their new marketing strategy to make like shittier and shittier cigarettes for people who are trying to quit? And then people just ended up like just smoking like basically rat poison with like a sprinkle of tobacco in it.
I think that is what they already do, man. I was thinking that, you know, back in the day, I smoked Marlboro Reds like when I was a teenager. Like, and a then fucking man. I started trying to cut back, and I bought like the 27s or whatever. And they're like shitty. They're not good.
Those are terrible. Yeah, those are literally the shavings off the floor.
Yeah, exactly. But that was like the new hot thing that they were selling people. And I was like, this is terrible. Like, who would smoke this shit? But then I smoked those for like a year. Cheaper. You know? Yeah, they are cheaper. There's that. But I also had grown up, my dad smoked more cigarettes than any human I've ever seen, which I should learn from him because, you know, he's on oxygen and stuff now. But he smoked the shittiest cigarettes on the planet. And so when I didn't have cigarettes, I'd like bum cigarettes from him or steal them when I was – no, like worse, like shit that you can only buy at like Barney's drugstore or something like that. You know, like just like Carnival.
I know Carnival. That's what we used to get when we were super, super like blitzed out. We would just – we'd get Yeah.
You could buy like a pack for like $2.
Yeah, it's crazy.
You know, as opposed to like $3.50 or $3.75.
Those really are. Those are seriously bad.
Oh, they're terrible. And they're like, they really are pretty harsh. They taste disgusting. They're really harsh. And I don't know. Smoking's terrible. It's a PSA. Don't smoke.
Yeah, and it's a fucking bitch to get off of, and that's one thing that gets me is like smug people who are, you know, like what's funny is that you never get smugness from people who used to smoke, right? Like people who have quit smoking, and you're like, man, I'm having a hell of a time quitting. They're all like, dude, I know, like it's fucking it's tough. But like people who've never done it, it's like, I don't understand. Why would you be paying to kill yourself? And you know, if you already know that it's bad, why don't you stop? Yeah. And to them, like what I want to say is like, here, do me this favor. Smoke these cigarettes for 2 weeks and then do exactly what you're telling me to do.
Yeah.
Just do it.
You know what I – no, totally. I mean, that's like the thing. You do it when you're a kid, when you first start – or not even a kid, but like maybe you're 18, 19, 20. I don't know. But you get a buzz, you know, when you first start smoking.
Right.
Like there's a buzz involved. So that's why you keep doing it.
Right.
Because you think you're in some minimal way getting high. And then by the time you're hooked, there's no buzz left. You don't have a buzz. No. There's, you know, nothing to it. I mean, I've gone, you know, several out. Like, there's been days at work during the holidays where I have to work
14 to 16 hours a day, and don't get a whole lot of smoke breaks. And you know, there's been a couple of times where I've gotten a buzz cause I've gotten so many hours without having a cigarette.
Right.
Which is pretty weird. Cause when I wake up in the morning, I don't really get a buzz. I don't think when I, but I don't know. That's a weird thing. And I was laughing at my friend the other day cause he's really hilarious about this. Cause he smokes like a pack a day probably. And he was talking about some kind of food or some shit. Can't remember. He's like, well, I don't eat that cause it's like bad for you and gives you cancer or something. And I was like, dude, you smoke a pack a day.
Yeah.
Like I wouldn't worry about the goddamn food. Like, you know,
these guys,
it's good that you're like health conscious or whatever. But if you smoke a pack a day, I don't think your fucking croutons with the extra butter is going to be the thing that kills you.
Right, exactly.
You know,
yeah, but, you know, he's just minimizing his potentialities.
No, I know. I do the same thing, but I try not to, talk about the cancer potentialities of the tortilla chips or whatever.
Right, for sure. Yeah.
I think that's my thing, dude. I'm going to go smoke a cigarette after I say this, and then I'm going to feel stupid or something. I don't know.
I think that's mostly
my thing, dude.
But
then
like,
again, the addiction thing comes in.
Right.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I think I mostly just don't. I think I just don't really give a fuck what people want to do with themselves as long as they don't hurt anybody else. I'm like, yeah, cool, whatever, man. Like, that's fine.
Yeah, I don't. Like, I don't care either. I think people are good, you know, and I honestly believe people are inherently good and have the best intentions for themselves and for others. I just think that sometimes that gets lost in other shit. And
have you always thought that way, or like, is it just like, did that evolve over time or what?
No, I haven't always thought that way. I honestly, used to have a very bad opinion about most people. I was pretty nihilistic as a teenager.
Otherwise known as a teenager.
Yeah. But, you know, I think, honestly, my brother, we just had a bad relationship our whole lives. And, you know, I used to be very angry about a lot of things that I'm not angry about now. And I understand them in a different way as I grew older.
Mm-hmm.
And
like angry,
I think
at him,
it's way more healthy.
Or...
Do what?
Like angry at him or just like the world or what?
Yeah. Well, angry at him. And also because I was angry at him, angry at the world, kind of like, because I felt like there was like, I was just like, man, if I feel this way about my brother, like, I don't know. It just felt, you know, I was confused, I think, you know, because I love my brother. And then there was a lot of people that were always angry with him because of the shit he had done or whatever. I was very conflicted about what it meant to, like, love somebody that was troubled and that other people didn't understand. And me, myself, not really understanding. But then I came to some conclusions the last few years, and me and my brother talk pretty regularly now, and he's married and doing well. And, he had one little relapse in the last 2 years, but has gotten back on the right track. And, I think more than anything, I think it's just when you have somebody so, addicted to drugs that you love, and I'm not talking, you know, I'm not talking just like smoking, whatever, like shooting up stuff, you know, so addicted, to where you worry about their well-being every day, all the time, you know, and wonder if you're going to have that person, there when you wake up. It changes you, you know, and I think I went through all these the steps of mourning, honestly. Over the years,
mourning for
like I had already like lost somebody.
I see.
Yeah. Like he was dead. Like basically, because it was that hard because you just never knew. And I'm talking, you know, gotten in some with the hardcore people before that wanted him dead. You know, and I'm not just talking, you know. Afraid of him ODing, that's there, but I'm talking about him being murdered, you know. That was a legit concern for years. Because he would get in with these groups, like big time groups, you know, like gang. He was in Arizona, and so you got some cartel stuff going on out there, and you got some hard ass people that will kill you without a second thought. And he was running around with some of these folks, and he's an addict, so of course he, you know, was stealing from certain people and stuff. And when I heard about all this stuff, I was absolutely fucking horrified. And I kind of already knew in the back of my mind that some of that was probably going on. But so it's not even just the drug thing's bad enough, but then you have that other stuff. And now I'm at a place where I just think, you know, I used to think my brother was a bad person, you know, and I realize now he's not a bad person. He has a illness, you know. And
what do you think makes a bad person?
You know, I don't know. I think, all right, like, it's really complex for me, man. I think egomaniacs, you know, are bad people. Just in the sense, like a Donald Trump kind of person. I think he's actually a bad person. And I think that's almost even different than, like, a serial killer to me, like Jeffrey Dahmer or something. I think that's a sick person. Does that make any sense at all?
Like, kind of, man.
I think there's people that that actually choose to be bad, and there's people that are bad. I don't know how to explain it. They're like mentally ill, bad. Yeah, or maybe they're just all mentally ill.
Yeah, you know? It goes down a weird rabbit hole, because on the one hand, I think everybody probably has a certain level of mental illness, right? But I think, you know, on the other hand, it's like, I mean, how far would you want to take that? I mean, even somebody like Donald Trump, if you look back on his past, you know, if he has, you know, probably undiagnosed, like, clinical narcissism, maybe some kind of sociopathy, I'm not really sure. He was also, you know, he was born into that life, you know, he's very, you know, insulated and didn't have a whole, like, I mean, if you look at somebody like Donald Trump, but you look at it from, like, I mean, I don't want to be the kind of guy who defends something like affluenza, because frankly, like, those teens should be fucking shot, but like, I also, like, don't, like, I also don't want to, like, I'm kind of, like, trying to understand your point a little bit more, because, you know, if it's a mental illness type thing, I mean, like, he's clearly mentally ill, so I guess it, like, really depends, man. I mean, I think that, I don't know, I mean, I think that, this might sound like a cop-out answer, but it depends on it depends on who you ask, right? I mean, there are probably some people out there who, if they asked about your brother, they'd be like, that's a bad dude, you know?
Yeah, and no, then, I'm sure, definitely.
And then with Donald Trump, I mean, some people are going to be like, you know, he's a pretty okay guy, you know? So, I mean, it's hard to tell. Right. It's hard to make those kind of, I mean, I think obviously.
Well,
like,
yeah, because it comes down to morals, right? And so everybody has a set that they live by in their own life, and they're always different from another person's. And I think that's what informs all of that shit, you know? So my set, even like my wife, you know, she's a Catholic. She has her own set of things, but also even within that world, she has things that differ from those values too, like the group's values. So those sets of values or morals that you think are important definitely inform who you think is going to be bad or good. Mm-hmm. But I think, I've always been very conflicted on that. I don't even know if I really have like a way. I think that I can almost, empathize with anybody, which sounds crazy. It does sound crazy, but to slight degrees. I think there are terrible, terrible people. And then, you know, that I'm just like, how the fuck can you do that? You're just like the biggest piece of shit in the world. But then I go back and look at these steps and these progressions and who they were before something happened or whatever. You know, it's weird to me that an incident where a guy kills somebody or whatever becomes the defining aspect of his life.
Totally.
If he's like 40 or something, you know what I mean? Because there was a person before that happened. Something happened in between. So I think that that level of that person was a human up until that thing happened. And then automatically what happens in society when something like that happens is we tend to dehumanize the person, because I think it makes us more comfortable to say, oh, like, you know, in the newspapers or whatever, like, fucking demon, blah, 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 guy, like, you know, horrible right. person, you know. But you don't hear about any other aspects of their lives. That's the defining thing. And does it make them a good person? Hell no. That's not what I'm saying. But I think, you know, if we continue to just demonize based off of a horrible action that happens, I don't think we're going to fix any of the problems we face in the world, because you got to understand those things.
You're dead on. And I think that, like, that's one of the main problems right now is, like, you know, I agree with when you said that you can empathize with almost anybody. I think that I'm pretty much on the same page, right?
Yeah.
Because, and I think it comes, you know, I'm from Oklahoma and you're from Kansas. And it's really, I mean, right. it's really easy for people in, like, California, Oregon, Washington, or, like, the East Coast to have maybe a bit of a stricter definition of what makes a person good or bad. But when you're in Oklahoma and you have to live around people who think very, very differently than you, I mean, you can either just become a hermit, or you can, you know, a lot of people I know form, you know, groups of like-minded people or whatever. But once you get out into the workforce and you have to interact with the 80% of people in your state who don't think like you or act like you.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you have to start finding some good in some of these people, you know, and I'll notice it with all the, I mean, of course, if it's just a stranger you meet
on
the street.
You'll never make it if you don't.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
you'll never, I would quit the second day of any job out here if I had to.
Like, if you're cut off with somebody saying something racist, like, you'd never have a job.
Yeah, yeah. Because it happens every day. And so, yeah, you don't get immune to it by I'm always uncomfortable and like, oh, fuck, that was fucked up, dude. But by the end of it, like, you have to go, like, oh, well, that guy has some kids. We talk about his family, whatever. Like, he's just trying to get by. And, you know, it's one of those things. All these people are humans, and I don't know. It's weird. It's kind of like the bubble thing, you know, everyone's talking about with the election, like, we live in a bubble and we're not paying attention to the other side, and that's why Trump won or whatever, which I don't know if I buy that or not, but I think there's an element of truth to it, because if you just write off an entire group of people, half the country, honestly, or whatever it is, like, you're full of shit. Engage, like, you know,
that's the thing on both sides too. I mean, like, you know, the other side, yeah, I mean, they have to quit being douchebags too, but I mean, everybody's just got to stop, you know, and start having, which is why I think with a lot of, like, really interesting podcasts, you'll have, like, the really good ones will have people on who they don't agree with, and they'll actually have conversations with them.
Definitely.
No matter how kind of, like, I've heard, you know, podcasts that have had that Milo dude on it, and people like Ann Coulter and stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, to a lot of people, myself included, like, those are, like, the grossest of the gross. But
the fact is,
and, I mean, unless you want to kill them, like, there's not much you can do about it. Which, I mean, that might be fine, too. Like, sending fucking Ann Coulter to, like, be drawn and quartered, you know, where, like, each of her limbs just splits off and she's, like, a screaming torso. Right. I don't think I would necessarily be against that. Or, like, that Milo dude, you know, just getting, like, that hot gold from Game of Thrones, because he kind of looks like that guy. You know what I'm talking about? The guy gets the gold on his head.
right.
Like, he kind of looked like just having that shit poured on him. Like, that would be kind of cool. But, like, if that's not the option, if we're not just going to go ahead and get to fucking each other up, then we got to talk. It's one or the other.
Well, yeah. It's the, you know, I've gone back and forth on this throughout my life, but I think the ultimate thing about, you know, free speech is, like, you know, you let vile people say vile things. If you just let it hide, like, what good does that do? If you suppress it, what good does that do? Like, you have to engage with that.
Right.
Not in a, like, oh, I support you kind of way. In a, like, let's talk. Let's try to see what the fuck you're even saying. I know it's asinine. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, just because it's ridiculous shit and it's hateful and it's whatever does not mean that we should not actually try to discuss things with these people. I mean, and yeah, it goes both ways, but I think that what's interesting to me is like Fox News and shit like that, or like Rush Limbaugh, whatever, these talk shows. It's not news, it's talk shows. But they, you know, they berate people. It's entertainment, and that's all it is. It's a fucking like minstrel show, you know what I mean? And they're horrible, horrible hosts. But like, you have to listen. I used to listen to Rush Limbaugh every day.
And they used to Laura Ingraham, Bill O'Reilly, and then Rush Limbaugh on. And that was the only radio station that I could get when I was working in the stock room at Kirkland's. And so I would listen to them every day. And you know what? At least then, this was like 10 years ago maybe, but at least back then and on the radio, Bill O'Reilly wasn't that bad. Something happened.
No, and what's weird is he's getting paid to say that shit. Yeah. And they all are. I think that the money is good enough to where they're just going to say anything. And I honestly believe they have writers for those shows.
Oh, sure. So
they're not writing that shit. That's not their own opinion. I mean, I'm sure it partially is or whatever, but to the extent Bill O'Reilly's reading off of fucking teleprompter, right?
Mm-hmm.
When he does his five notes or whatever, and his whole like thing, that is some scripted ass shit. He was told to ask those questions. He was told to touch on those points. They're puppets, man, you know, for
right.
evil empire. But you know, I think there's some of that can be said on the other side too. So, and I'm like hardcore. I'm almost like a damn communist. Like, I'm like, fuck everything. We just need to like, not, I hate capitalism. I hate all this shit. And I can't, it's such a complex thing for not only me, but I think for the majority of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you always get these people that, you know, look at Barack Obama. Like, he won pretty substantially, you know, when he was elected 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
What has happened, you know? I don't know. But what I do know is people change their minds. They go, oh, this is horrible, but maybe it'll be good, you know, or whatever. I've talked to people that said, yeah, I think Trump's a piece of shit, but I'm going to vote for him because I want him to shake shit up. And I'm like, fuck you, dude. We don't need to shake it up like that. But okay, you also have your right to vote, you know, and like, I'm not going to say you're, you know, whatever. I mean, I have those conversations where I'm like, you probably shouldn't do that. But at the end of the day, if that person votes for that person, like, they're not really any less of a good person to me. You know what I mean?
No, same here. And I think an invention that could completely change the world, and I'm just going to throw it out there because I'm sure as shit not going to make it, would be something like, you know, whenever we have super augmented reality and we can, you know, kind of, you know, like put on glasses or whatever, or get a contact lens in there and like see text messages and shit like that. If we had a filter, like a chip in our brain that acted kind of like a Facebook filter, but for people, and we could just filter out certain words whenever we wanted to. And so if you were talking to somebody and you could just be like, filter all political opinions, and then you're hanging out with somebody and they're like, yeah, so anyway, after that was done, I told my kid, like, hey, don't go back outside without your shoes anymore. Have you seen anything about, like, this Trump dude? And you just be like, you know, auto-program your voice to be like, word, word, word.
Right.
You know, and I think that would, like, improve relations the world over if you could literally just filter that. Well, and then you could turn the filter off, and then the trade-off for it would be, you know, once every week or maybe twice a week, you'd have to go to a place, a meeting hall, you know, in your town with a bunch of local people, and you'd have to turn that off, and you'd have to listen to everybody talk about that shit. You know what I mean? But then it would stay in that building, you know, and it would never leave.
Yeah. I think it's a thing that's kind of changed with with this newer generation of folks is I you know, I'm sure people did not talk about politics like they did when we were growing up. And part of it is because there's a different decorum. They thought it was cheesy and tasteless to do so.
Yeah.
And
when I was in high school, dude, nobody fucking talked about that shit. Nobody.
Yeah, no, like, you know, and like I would hear my dad talk about it. He's my dad. But, you know, like if they had people over, you know, they wouldn't bring up the current election. They wouldn't talk about this shit. It was like manners. Like you just don't get into those things during social engagements.
And then,
you
know, social media.
And that's that's completely changed. Now that's all anybody everywhere wants to talk about. And I totally agree. Like if you had that fucking filter, it would just take you back to how it was like when we were growing up, when we were kids, you know?
Yeah.
And
it wouldn't be hiding from opinions too, because like the whole point of it would be that there would be a specific space that you went to, you know, where those things were acceptable. It's like, people usually only fuck in their bedrooms, right? And most people aren't, you know, out fucking in trees and stuff. But like, what if politics was treated like the same way, where like you have those discussions with people, but there's a time and a place for it, right? Not like when you're like, hey, did you see that Obama's a Muslim? And it's like, dude, I'm eating spaghetti. Like, I don't care.
Right. And it's like, I think, you know, definitely those conversations happen. What I think happened, though, was, you know, when the 24-hour news media started, which happened in our generation, unfortunately. And when all that stuff – because before it was also news. You know what I mean?
Right.
It was actual fucking news when I was 10.
Right.
You know, and I think that all of that has changed because what they are is they're agitators. The news stations work in the same way as propaganda machines in the sense that they agitate the populace. They want to disrupt what people think and feel, and not with facts, you know. And so we're living in a weird time, man. You know, that's my take on that. Cause it wasn't like that before.
You know, it really wasn't. And I mean, it's possible that we were kids and we didn't notice that, but you know, I mean, it does really, I mean, besides being a grown up, I think maybe people can like let me know in a comment or something, but it definitely wasn't always like this. Like this feels different. I think social media and the 24-hour news cycle have just changed that shit.
Yeah.
Like that's where I would get, like, I think everything in moderation, right? Like, so I'm like a little communism in moderation, a little capitalism in moderation, you know, a little you know, democracy, a little fascism. And where I would be fascist is in like that, like 24-hour news cycle would be decimated.
Right.
Just decimated.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Like,
definitely.
If I was dictator, I don't care what was going on. I'd be like, no, we're shutting those down. I don't care what the laws are. I don't care free speech, nothing. Right. Like, we are shutting those down. Like, no more.
Right. I totally agree with that 100%.
Yeah. Well, thank you, sir, for taking the time to speak to me.
Yeah, man. Thank you.
I'm glad we got a good connection, man. Like, this is...
Yeah, it's been our second try. Third try.
Yeah.
Second try.
Oh, yeah. Second session, third try, I guess. But this one's good because we've had a lot of practice. So I think I think this one was even better than the last one. So
cool, man.
Thanks a lot, and have a good night, man.
Hey, you too, man. Thanks.
Yep.